Discrimination and racial disparities are a constant in the lives of many people of color. Here in Wisconsin, we incarcerate the highest percentage of black men by population in the entire country, and Wisconsin has been labeled one of the worst states in the nation for black children based on measures including poverty, single-parent households, and math proficiency. Reverend Alexander G. was instrumental in forming the Justified Anger Coalition, which aims to address racial inequities in Madison. He's also the president and founder of Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and is the pastor of Fountain of Life Church here in Madison. Reverend G., welcome back to Central Time.
Judith, it's great to be back here. Thank you for allowing me to come.
So remind us of the open letter that you wrote to the Madison community several years ago now in December 2013.
I can't believe that that's almost been 4 years, but that came on the heel of a few incidents, being pulled over by the police in front of my church, going to a prayer meeting one Saturday evening, for no violations, no taillights out. And the other part of that was, I had attended a downtown Rotary meeting where I gave an update on some of the statistics that you mentioned, mm-hmm. and I was thanked for not being an angry black man. And I said, but I am. How did you not hear my talk? How could these statistics be real and I not be angry? You should be angry as well. So I think after that point, I just said, I want to tell my story. So I spoke with a friend who introduced me to folks at the Cap Times and I told my story and experiences because I want Madison to be all that it can be. I just said I wanted to tell my story in my own words as a person who's grown up in this community that was called Justified Anger. And then a series of events and things have taken place. But that was the nexus, really wanting to tell my story of personal experiences that I actually thought would never happen to me. I never thought that I'd be profiled by police in my own church parking lot. And that was a rude awakening mm-hmm. for me. And it certainly challenged my access, my belief in my access to the American dream.
And I remember that letter really striking a chord with other members of the African-American community, but also members of white Madison who were shocked that this was going on in what they think of as such a liberal and welcoming and progressive community. And so you really got a lot of interest and a lot of people saying, you know, what's the next step? And so how did the Justified Anger Coalition then come out of that?
What came out of that was, first of all, I was just such a novice in all of this because I didn't write that letter or article to start any movement. I just felt this was my way of expressing my feelings and my experiences here in Madison. Certainly those feelings resonated with others, but I realized this was not a task that I could take on myself. And in actuality, even the 4, 5, 6 individuals who stood with me as a part of the coalition initially, our organizations is not enough because we were all African Americans. And our premise for Justified Anger and for the Our Madison Plan, its framework, is that we would create an agenda that would be black led, but it would be implemented by the broader community. And so in order for this to really, really work, the coalition's got to be the entire community. We've got to see the need and see our role in helping to eradicate racial disparities.
And so you just referenced the document titled Our Madison Plan that was released just a couple years ago. So what is in the Our Madison Plan and what is the ultimate goal of it?
Sure. That's a great question, Judith. When we found out about the Race to Equity Report, when it was brought to the public's attention, I think there were at least two camps. One camp that was aghast. How could this happen to us? Others were in complete denial. And when you have such a chasm in a belief system, it's difficult to move ahead because people are so busy convincing each other of their views that the issues still lie unattended to. And so What the Our Madison Plan was a snapshot of the black community, because we heard from Race to Equity. We heard from the state of Black Madison. We were hearing from elected officials. We weren't hearing from the community. So I spent time going to each high school and talking with African-American boys, listening to men who are formerly incarcerated, single moms, and asking, what do you think needs to happen to move the dial on racial disparities? So that was the most comprehensive snapshot of the black situation and the black community taken by black people in Madison's history. And at our rollout, I said, now to do all of this, it would take $20 million, at least over the next 2 or 3 years, because we can't control Department of Corrections and Madison Police Department and the university. But the community said, here are the things that would have to move and shift if we're going to see racial disparity change. So our hope was two things, that the community would look at parts of that framework to say, what can we do inside our organizations in terms of hiring, promoting, recruitment, retention, communication, training? What can we do to move that? And the other piece was to motivate people to get individuals on an individual level to become involved in somehow making that move. And we also wanted to find, what are the leveraging points to make the community believe that we can make a difference? But when you see a framework and you state that there's a problem, people think you can actually fix it. This is age old and multi-agency and organizational. There's no way that one organization can fix it. But we wanted to identify it so that people could believe that there were problems, because without acknowledging that, no one would agree to work together on addressing them.
Reverend G, I want to go back to something that you said, because you said that when the R. Madison plan was released, there some people were aghast and shocked and horrified. Some people were in complete denial. But I'm guessing that there was a third group, and that's members of the African American community,
who,
for whom
surprised.
It wasn't surprising
exactly.
at all. And so it really seems like that the response to that plan really kind of typifies what the situation has been and what the problem
oh,
is.
Oh, definitely. Because the initial response in the African American community actually was twofold, Judith. One was a duh, we knew. The other part was, why didn't you say anything when Urban League put out a similar report in 2008, 2009 called State of Black Madison? Some could argue with the advent of social media, the race to equity just caught traction. But there was very little response when some of the same information was stated by a black consortium in 2008, 2009. So the black community was really vacillating between those two opinions. We know it's happened, but we've been trying to tell you for years. In fact, my nonprofit, Nehemiah, is 25 years old. We created it in 92 because of racial disparities. So there are people who are still thinking either this is made up or it's a new reality, when in fact we were actually late getting to the game of addressing racial disparities in 92 when I created my nonprofit to empower black families because of the lack of representation in many of our mm-hmm. systems, you know, schools, mm-hmm. judges, social workers.
We're talking with Reverend Alex G. about the Justified Anger Coalition, our Madison plan, and what challenges are still facing the African-American community in Madison, in Wisconsin, and beyond. And Reverend G., the our Madison plan focused on several main areas: education, economic development, mass incarceration, family and community wellness, and leadership development. And what do you think of those has seen the most progress in the years since it started?
You know, it's interesting. There's so much work that has to take place, Judith, when you're trying to move race relations. Our knee-jerk reaction is a technical solution. More diversity, more hires, we'll fix this. When really it's a complex adaptive issue. It's a complex adaptive system. So how do you affect the thought patterns, experiences, hunger, truancy, homelessness, lack of role models, lack of training? There's so many moving pieces that to try to harness all of that to move in the same direction is very, very difficult. So we decided not to rank those five areas because we said they are interrelated. Mm-hmm. But the community identified those areas. It wasn't the think tank at campus. It wasn't a bunch of nonprofit leaders. We listened to the community. And so any traction in one would be attraction in so many of them. So because we really want to mobilize Madison for change, we decided to bring together the team members or the stakeholders. Let's just use education, for example, mm-hmm. from Edgewood, Madison College, UW-Madison, and then most of the organizations from One City to Boys and Girls Club, Urban League, Nehemiah, Odyssey, Omega, the organizations that serve black youth educationally, coming together and work on a single goal that together, collaboratively, they would bring individual and organizational strength to not only move towards addressing that issue, but de-siloing these 12 agencies that rarely do anything mm-hmm. together. With criminal justice, we have someone from the federal prosecutor's office, the state public defender, the DA, we have a judge, we have the sheriff. These groups have never really agreed to work together for a year minimally to find a common goal that we can work on together to move the needle on criminal justice or mass incarceration. So actually de-siloing some of the service providers is how we address these issues, because that siloing makes it very difficult for African Americans to receive the services and support that we need. And so on one hand, the plan says we've got to empower African Americans. But on the other hand, we've got to really challenge and tweak the systems and the stakeholders so that we play and work together in the sandbox. Because if folks are ready for change and the organizations aren't collaborative in how they provide those changes, then we're defeated. And so trying to make sure that there's unity so that direction for this comes from those stakeholders down. But at the same time, the grassroots folks are saying, here are some of the quick wins we can have. This is what we need: more after school programs or alternatives to incarceration. So having information come out of those work groups around those five areas you mentioned, education and leadership, but also information coming from the ground up, helps us to have the top down, bottom up idea process or dream process, so that our results are not just about programs, but how do you move systems and people's hearts being changed to want to engage these issues on a personal level rather than just watching the Black community do this for themselves.
We're talking with Reverend Alexander G. He was the driving force behind the Justified Anger Coalition. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you're African American, what challenges have you faced living in Wisconsin? What changes do you think would make a difference? And where do those solutions need to come from? And if you're not Black but concerned about these issues, where do you see room for progress? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. The Reverend Alex G. stays with us to discuss efforts to eliminate racial disparities in Madison and beyond. And we want to hear from you. What are you thinking on this issue? You can call 800-642-1234. How do you think it's come to be that Wisconsin ranks so badly in terms of how African Americans fare in our state? What would success mean in addressing the many racial gaps we face? And what are you seeing in your own community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Reverend G., I want to ask you about some recent acquittals in high-profile cases of police officers shooting and killing Black men. In the span of just 1 month, there were acquittals of police officers in the killings of Philando Castile in Minneapolis, of Sylville Smith in Milwaukee, and of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa. What impact do verdicts like that have on the African-American community?
It has a tremendous impact on morale. There are days I wake up, Judith, and ask myself, what year is this? My undergraduate degree is in African American history. And there are days I wake up and feel like I'm back in one of my textbooks. And so I think many of us feel, well, if there is video evidence, it'll be easier to prove this, to indict someone. And even today, you know, the case of Laquan McDonald and how it's coming to light that police officers were complicit in hiding some of the material. It's disheartening because it reminds African Americans of the history, the uneasy history that we've had with law enforcement. So it just regurgitates those old feelings. When I was a kid, my grandmother talked about Emmett Till, and now we're talking about new names like Philando Castile and Michael Brown. And so I just feel that we take steps forward and we take so many steps backwards. And I have a brother who's in law enforcement. He's a police officer in a major community. I appreciate what he does. I love law enforcement. But I just feel that in this day and time, to have a sense of fear or angst for my daughter if she's stopped, or for me if I'm stopped, just having the sense that I'm not sure if I can survive it, not just avoiding a loss of points, but just surviving it is I don't even have the words to explain how daunting and how ominous that is.
Well, and I think something that many white parents are not aware of is that African-American parents feel the need, especially with their sons, to give them the talk. Oh, yes. and tell them how to try to stay safe. Can you give us a little insight into what that talk entails?
I mean, it breaks my heart. I've had to give my daughter the talk. I mean, I was taught to keep my hands attended to, not to get out of the car, not to make sudden movements. But I learned to drive 40 years ago. And so there wasn't this sense of fear. But my daughter's a 20-year-old co-ed. She's a senior at UW-Madison. Good driving record, but I've instructed her. And this breaks my heart to do so because I know by saying this, I do put her at risk. If it's a dark street, put your hazards on, call 911. You know, let them know that you're being pulled over, but you're trying to move to a well, you know, well lit area. Don't drive fast. Don't flee. Keep your hands at 10 and 2, because I know that my daughter would freak out if she were pulled over by the police. She'd start crying. She'd start shaking. It would be easy to think she's drinking or on something. If she were asked to stop, she cries in the back seat if I get a ticket. So I fear what her physical and visceral reaction would be to a stop and what that means. And for the reaction, it overwhelms me. There are very few things that worry me more than that. And I don't like having that because her uncle is a police officer, but I actually have more talks about that than date drugs. I mean, I just may say, when you go to a party, you know, have your friends hold your cup, don't leave it, don't put anything down. But in terms of like specifically what you do if you're stopped, I just go into great detail. And I hate that I've got to do that because I don't want her to grow up in a world where she needs to understand that she's got to take precautions that her white friends don't have to. And it's sad.
We are talking with the Reverend Alex G, and we have some callers who would like to join the conversation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And let's go to Jerry in Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm calling in response to your question. That is, I'm an African-American male, obviously, and I have had the fortune to travel throughout the world, throughout the United States, and without question, by far, Wisconsin is the worst. It's, and I say it because many reasons, but and we're focusing on the police, and although that's a very serious problem, it's more than that. You know, it's the people. You know, I've had conversations with people who are in their 20s and 30s. And in Milwaukee, and so, you know, I've never had a conversation with a black person. And it's not just the conservatives, it's the so-called progressives as well, and progressives I find worse. Because progressives know how to voice their opinion and say the correct things. But they're just as bad or worse than the conservatives. So, you know, I can understand the conservatives because I how they think. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for instance, this program, you should be having white people call to express their feelings.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to stop there, Jerry, just because I want to make sure Reverend G has a chance to respond. And it seems like there are those, like you said, the silos among different organizations, but also silos between different communities.
Sure. I think the issue with Wisconsin is we want to believe that we're a post-racial society. So that's why many Wisconsinites, African-American Wisconsinites, would say it's easier to navigate in the South because you know where to go, what to say, and how to maneuver. Whereas in this area, you're not sure, everyone seems nice, and then you hear these weird comments way out of left field. But I think it really grows out of a sense that we have not kept up with the growing diversity of the community, and that when we said we need more teachers, social workers of color, the response was, we love everyone, we don't see color. And I just think we've created this vacuum of being outnumbered. And so people do live in a community like ours and not have an interaction with an African-American mm-hmm. until college. And I think part of it just comes out of an overestimation of our niceness and our ability to relate to everyone. So we didn't think that it was important to be culturally competent or to bring people of color into key positions. And this is part of what we're left with.
Thanks for that call, Jerry. And let's go to Jeff in Madison next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Just a quick question. Why the name Justified Anger? Wouldn't it be better to have something more positive, like Unified Action or Unified Justice or something just more positive?
All right. Thanks for that call, Jeff. And actually, Reverend G, I know you wanted to address that.
Sure. I would say I appreciate Jeff's question, but Jeff has the luxury of having not grown up being angry. And so those words that he mentioned, they don't resonate with me. When you think about the issues, I'm an African-American man. I live in Fitchburg. I have an earned doctorate degree. I have a home that I've built. I run a successful ministry. When I was pulled over by the police, I felt in front of my church, I felt disconnected from the American dream. I didn't just feel pulled over. Everything that I believed about my actions have helped me to rise above that because my mom promised me, my teachers promised me, if you do this, get a degree, get a graduate degree, you will not be seen or based or judged by your color. When that all crumbled for me, anger was a natural result. It pulled me out of my bubble of thinking I was better than or I wouldn't be seen the same. And it moved me towards speaking out on the issues. And so I think we have to really rethink the word anger. I'm not, you know, there's an image of when a black man is angry that he's going to start burning down things. I haven't burned down a thing. I build up a lot. But anger has moved me out of my comfort to realize I will no longer stay silent. I will risk my reputation, my name, and resources to move this ahead because I am Madison at its best and its worst. I am Madison in that my mom came here as a single mother on welfare, got a degree, raised me and sent me to college. But I'm also Madison's worst, where I'm frustrated, where I realize those opportunities, those attitudes are still not prevalent. And I'm a gift to this community by helping to call it back to its purpose. And if I water down the name, I water down the issue. And if people can't respond to anger because of the word, they're not bent on following anyway. We really are about solutions. So let's not get stuck on the name. I'm angry, point, you know, period. I'm angry because of 400 years of history, but I'm motivated to do something because of that. My anger motivates me. And when I was just suburban, I was comfortable.
Reverend G, thanks so much for joining us today. Reverend Alex G was one of the founders of the Justified Anger Coalition. He joined us to talk about racial disparities in Madison and beyond.